The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading articles to you from the Associated Press and the Religion News Service. First, we have an article published by the Associated Press on the 7th of August, written by Nicole Winfield, entitled, Pope Discusses Health, His Ditched Peace Prayer in Fatima, and LGBTQ plus Catholics in Airborne Briefing. Aboard the Papal Plane. Pope Francis said on August 6 his recovery from his latest abdominal surgery is going well, and stressed that he ditched speeches during his five-day trip to Portugal and spoke off the cuff, not because he was tired or feeling unwell, but to better communicate with young people. Francis was asked about his health en route home from Lisbon, where he presided over World Youth Day Festival. It was his first trip since he was hospitalized in June for 9 days following last-minute surgery to repair an abdominal hernia and remove intestinal scar tissue. The trip, which came during a heat wave that sent temperatures to 104 degrees Fahrenheit in Lisbon, was notable because the 86-year-old pontiff deviated so often from his speeches, homilies, and even prayers, which are usually drafted months in advance and crafted with specific events and audiences in mind. One of the most notable deviations was a prayer for peace that Francis was supposed to have delivered in the Portuguese shrine of Fatima, which is famous precisely because of its century-old connection to Exhortations for Peace and Russia's conversion in the aftermath of World War I. Given Russia's ongoing war in Ukraine, a papal peace prayer at Fatima was to have been one of the highlights of Francis's visit, but also potentially problematic as the Vatican seeks to maintain relations with Moscow and the Russian Orthodox Church, which has strongly supported the Kremlin's invasion. Instead of pronouncing the prayer, Francis ad-libbed his speech before the statue of the Madonna and skipped the peace prayer entirely, reciting instead a Hail Mary with young disabled people. The Vatican later posted part of the prayer on the @pontifex handle of the platform X, formerly known as Twitter. Asked why, Francis insisted en route back to Rome that he had prayed silently for peace but didn't want to give publicity to a public prayer. I prayed to the Madonna, and I prayed for peace. I didn't make publicity, but I prayed. And we have to continually repeat this prayer for peace. A Vatican official, speaking on condition he not be named, noted that Francis had originally wanted to travel to Fatima alone, with just a few gendarmes for a private visit, but relented to a proper visit. The official denied any ecclesial diplomatic considerations entered Francis's decision-making, suggesting instead that the omission was part of an attempt to separate Fatima's mystical religious value from its Soviet and World War I history. Francis, meanwhile, said he cut short his other speeches because he realized young people don't have a lot of attention, and that he needed to engage them, not lecture them with lengthy, complicated discourse or homilies, he said. Homilies can sometimes be torture, he said, blah, blah, blah. He said the church must come around to a new idea of homilies that are brief and with a clear, loving message. On his recovery, Francis said he had the abdominal stitches removed, but that he had to wear a protective belt for 2 to 3 months to ensure the incision healed well. My health is good, he said. In other comments, Francis affirmed that he included LGBTQ plus Catholics in his exhortation that todos, 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 everyone, 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 is welcome in the Catholic Church. The comment became something of a motto for this World Youth Day, reflective of his vision of an inclusive church, welcome to all. The church is mother, he said. Each of us finds God on his or her own path in the church, and the church is mother and guides each one on his or her path. Now an article published by the Religion News Service on July 31, written by Jack Jenkins, and entitled Falwell Jr. Sues Liberty University, Alleging Trademark Infringement. Jerry Falwell Jr., the former president of Liberty University, is suing the school, arguing administrators are committing trademark infringement by using the late Jerry Falwell Sr.'s likeness without consulting the family. The lawsuit, which was filed in federal court last week on behalf of Falwell Jr. and the Family Trust, accuses the school of misappropriating, for itself, the name and image of Falwell Sr., the conservative Christian evangelist who co-founded the Evangelical University in 1971. The university has now repeatedly distributed advertising and promotional materials that use the Jerry Falwell trademark, as well as Dr. Falwell's name and image, in a manner that is likely to leave consumers confused as to the relationship between Liberty University and the Jerry Falwell brand and the Falwell Family Trust, the lawsuit reads. The lawsuit claims the school has already created a custom font based on Falwell Sr.'s handwriting for advertising purposes and even created a hologram of the late evangelist. It also notes the school's intention to create a Jerry Falwell Center on campus as a welcome center for future students, a move it alleges also infringes on the trademark. Falwell Sr., a pastor and nationally known televangelist who emerged as a prominent political figure in the 1990s, ran the school until he died at his desk in 2007. It struggled financially during his tenure, but rebounded under his son, Falwell Jr., who invested heavily in online education. During his tenure, Liberty became one of the largest Christian schools in the country. Falwell Jr. resigned as president of the Evangelical Christian School in 2020, in the wake of a series of scandals involving his family, including allegations that his wife, Becky, had a years-long sexual relationship with a business associate. Asked about the lawsuit, a Liberty spokesperson said the school prefers not to comment on active litigation, but sent along a statement to provide context. The spokesperson argued Falwell Sr.'s name is synonymous with Liberty University, and for decades has been used across campus, including on buildings such as the Jerry Falwell Museum and the Jerry Falwell Library. In addition, the spokesperson alleged the lawsuit is a response to a request made by Falwell Jr. for Liberty to pay $7 million for his permission to continue to use the name of Liberty's founder for the next 4 years and allow the former president to maintain total editorial control of Liberty's use of the name of Liberty's founder. The school, the spokesperson said, denied the request. Liberty University is confident it will ultimately prevail in this case, and the university will be able to maintain its use of the name of its founder, the statement concluded. Now an article from the Associated Press, published on July 31, written by Holly Meyer, entitled, New Poll Shows Just How Many Americans Believe in Angels. Compared with the devil, angels carry much more credence in America. Angels even get more credence than, well, hell. More than astrology, reincarnation, and the belief that physical things can have spiritual energies. In fact, about 7 in 10 U.S. adults say they believe in angels, according to a new poll by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. People are yearning for something greater than themselves, beyond their own understanding, said Jack Groger, a chaplain for the L.A. Angels and a longtime Southern California fire captain who has aided many people in their gravest moments. That search for something bigger, he said, can take on many forms, from following a religion to crafting a self-driven purpose to believing in, of course, angels. For a lot of people, angels are a lot safer to worship, said Groger, who also pastors a non-denominational church in Orange, California, and is a chaplain for the NHL's Anaheim Ducks. People turn to angels for comfort, he said. They are familiar, regularly showing up in pop culture as well as in the Bible. Comparably, worshiping Jesus is far more involved. When Groger preaches about angels, it is with the context that they are part of God's kingdom. Americans' belief in angels, 69%, is about on par with belief in heaven and the power of prayer, but bested by belief in God or higher power at 79%. Fewer U.S. adults believe in the devil or Satan, 56%, astrology, 34%, reincarnation, 34%, and that physical things can have spiritual energies, such as plants, rivers, or crystals, 42%. The widespread acceptance of angels shown in the APNORC poll makes sense to Susan Garrett, an angel expert and New Testament professor at Louisville Presbyterian Theological Seminary in Kentucky. It tracks with historical surveys, she said, adding that the U.S. remains a faith-filled country, even as more Americans reject organized religion. But if the devil is in the details, so are people's understanding of angels. They're very malleable, Garrett said of angels. You can have any one of a number of quite different worldviews in terms of your understanding of how the cosmos is arranged. Whether there's spirit beings, whether there's life after death, whether there's a God, and still find a place for angels in that worldview. Talk of angels, Garrett said, is often also about something else, like the way God interacts with the world and other hard-to-articulate ideas. The large number of U.S. adults who say they believe in angels includes 84% of those with a religious affiliation, 94% of evangelical Protestants, 81% of mainline Protestants, and 82% of Catholics, and 33% of those without one. And of those angel-believing religiously unaffiliated, that includes 2% of atheists, 25% of agnostics, and 50% of those identified as nothing in particular. The broad acceptance is what fascinates San Francisco-based witch and author Devin Hunter. Angels show up independently in different religions and traditions, making them part of the fabric that unites humanity. We're all getting to the same conclusion, said Hunter, who spent 16 years as a professional medium and started communicating as a child with what he believed were angels. Hunter estimates that a belief in angels applies to about half of those practicing modern witchcraft today. And for some who don't believe, their rejection is often rooted in the religious trauma they experienced growing up. Angels become a very big deal for long-term practitioners who made occultism their primary focus, said Hunter, an angel-loving occultist. We cannot escape them in any way, shape, or form. Jennifer Goodwin of Oviedo, Florida, also is among the roughly 7 in 10 U.S. adults who say they believe in angels. She isn't sure if God exists and rejects the afterlife dichotomy of heaven and hell, but the recent deaths of her parents solidified her views on these celestial beings. Goodwin believes her parents are still keeping an eye on the family, not in any physical way, or as a supernatural apparition, but that they manifest in those moments when she feels a general sense of comfort. I think that they are around us, but it's in a way that we can't understand, Goodwin said. I don't know what else to call it except an angel. Angels mean different things to different people, and the idea of a loved one becoming heavenly angels after death is neither an unusual belief nor a universally held one. In his reading of Scripture, as an evangelical Protestant, Gregor said he believes angels are something else entirely. They have never been human and are on another level in heaven's hierarchy. We are higher than angels, he said. We do not become an angel. Angels do interact with humans, though, said Gregor, but what that looks like, we're not 100% sure. They worship God, who created this angelic legion of unknown numbers, he said, adding that evangelicals often attribute the demonic forces in the world to the angels who fell from heaven when the devil rebelled. The Western ideas about angels can be traced through the Bible and to the worldviews of its monotheistic authors, Garrett said. Those beliefs have changed and developed for millennia, influenced by cultures, theologians, and even the ancient polytheistic beliefs that came before the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, she said. There are sort of lines of continuity from the Bible that you can trace all the way up to the New Age movement, said Susan Garrett, who wrote No Ordinary Angel, Celestial Spirits and the Christian Claims About Jesus. The angels in the Bible do God's bidding, and angelic violence is one part of their job description, said Esther Hamori, author of the upcoming book God's Monsters, Vengeful Spirits, Deadly Angels, Hybrid Creatures, and Divine Hitmen of the Bible. The angels of the Bible are just as likely to assassinate individuals and slaughter entire populations as they are to offer help and protect and deliver, said Hamori. She doesn't believe in these angels, but studies them as a Hebrew Bible professor at Union Theological Seminary in New York, where she teaches a popular Monster Heaven class. They're just God's obedient soldiers doing the task at hand. And sometimes that task is in the human being's best interest, and sometimes it's not, she said. The perception that angels act angelic and look like the idyllic winged creatures atop Christmas trees could be attributed to an early centuries belief that people are assigned one good angel and one bad, or have a good and bad spirit to guide them, Garrett said. The idea shows up on the shoulders of cartoon characters and is likely what Abraham Lincoln was alluding to in his famous appeal for unity, when he referenced the better angels of our nature in his first inaugural address, she said. It's also tied in with ideas about guardian angels, which again, in very ancient views, got developed over the centuries, Garrett said. For Sheila Avery of Chicago, angels are protectors, capable of keeping someone from harm. Avery, who belongs to a non-denominational church, credits them with those moments, like when a person's plan falls through, but ultimately it saves them from being in the thick of an unexpected disaster. They turn on the news and a terrible tragedy happened at that particular place, Avery said, suggesting it was an angel that was probably watching over them. The poll of 1,680 adults was conducted May 11 through 15 using a sample drawn from NORC's probability-based Amerispeak panel, which is designed to be representative of the U.S. population. The margin of sampling error for all respondents is plus or minus 3.4 percentage points. Our last article was published by the Religion News Service on July 20, written by Fiona Andre and entitled Meet the Christian Creators Designing Chatbots with a Biblical Worldview. From a very young age, Nils Gulbrandsen remembers asking a lot of questions during Bible studies. Gulbrandsen describes spending his free time as a teen Googling Christian scholars' views on different topics, digging through sermons, and scouring YouTube videos until he found satisfying answers. With the release of ChatGPT, the former computer science student turned finance intern saw an opportunity to build the resource he wished he'd had as a young evangelical Christian in Minnesota. About 3 months ago, Gulbrandson, 23, started work on BibleMate.io, a Christian chat GPT, to help interrogative minds who are looking for biblical answers to life's difficult questions. The big difference from ChatGPT is that it's a model grounded in a biblical and theological view of the world, Gulbrandson said about his version of the chatbot, which relies on an ever-growing database of sermons, books, and academic articles to inform the answers it offers. The launch of ChatGPT in November 2022 by the research laboratory OpenAI has spurred both excitement and trepidation among Christians, forcing existential questions on the level of what it means to be human, along with ethical dilemmas such as how much is too much help from a chatbot when writing a sermon? What about leading a whole worship service like a ChatGPT avatar did in early June at a Lutheran church in Germany? Gulbrandson sees a number of uses for BibleMate.io in a church context, for pastors doing sermon research, for church volunteers drafting a Bible study guide, for curious teens like he once was, who want to go deeper in youth group. But he also hopes non-Christians will use the chatbot for their questions about God. He pointed to one of his favorite features, the Explain to Me Like I'm Five tool. You type a hard-to-answer theological concept, and it would dumb it down and explain it in the way you would to a five-year-old kid, he said. The goal is to give responses rooted in unwavering biblical truth, said Gulbrandson, who said he tried to generate sources from well-respected scholars for his database, citing William Lane Craig and C.S. Lewis. Of course, Gulbrandson acknowledged not every Christian agrees on just what is biblical truth. For example, he explained, on a question such as whether Christians should speak in tongues, the chatbot would pull out what the scriptures say and then offer perspectives from different denominations. The app is just a medium, a platform for the Bible to say what it says. The app itself is neutral in that sense, but the Bible takes clear stances on certain issues, he said. When asked about same-sex marriage, the chatbot recommends approaching the question with love, compassion, and respect for individuals, regardless of their sexual orientation, before adding that sexual relations are exclusively described within the context of heterosexual marriage, quoting Bible verses like Genesis 2:24. Gulbrandson wants BibleMate.io to give politically neutral responses on social issues, where Christians often don't see eye to eye, claiming Jesus wasn't a Democrat or a Republican. I don't want to create a division because we see it all the time with Christians that are more conservative and Christians that are more progressive, said Gulbrandson, who declined to reveal which camp he identifies with. Jesus himself was not a socialist. He wasn't a capitalist. He never explicitly said, hey, this is the correct political ideology, he added. Soon after its release, Gulbrandson sought feedback from other Christians on social media. On the Facebook group AI for Church Leaders and Pastors, he brainstormed with fellow AI enthusiasts on how to improve his new chatbot. The group of nearly 4,000 members, including pastors, churchgoers, and worship leaders, chats about creative ways to use tools such as ChatGPT, Jasper, an AI content generator, or MidJourney, which generates images, in their ministries. Joe Sa, an engineer, also finds himself regularly asking for advice from the group on his new project. At the beginning of the year, he started developing pastors.ai, a chatbot that draws on churches' sermon libraries to answer people's questions. It's a chatbot, Sud said, that he initially designed for himself. I wanted to be able to ask my pastor some very personal questions. How could Christians think about divorce? How do we love our LGBTQ+ neighbors? Questions I would be a little bit shy to ask in person. Now we can do that because it's read hundreds of hours of sermons, he said. For this 45-year-old who has worked in Silicon Valley for 25 years, pastors.ai was also an occasion to reconnect with his faith. When his church moved online during the pandemic, staying engaged and paying attention was hard, he admitted. Excited by ChatGPT's launch, he teamed up with coworkers from the e-commerce software firm he founded in 2022 and worked full-time on the chatbot. Recently, pastors.ai obtained OpenAI credits and saw plans to demonstrate the tool at numerous AI events this year. The greatest challenge, he said, is to get churches to accept it. There are mixed reactions. In one camp, people are blown away. They think it's magical, Sa said. A second camp is a bit more skeptical, especially church leaders. Some pastors even went as far as questioning the chatbot's claims, arguing the tool distorts their words. That has been an interesting reaction, Sud said, with a laugh. In a recent article, R.J. King, a Presbyterian pastor from Illinois, pointed out that as interesting as these AI tools are, church leaders need to remain careful not to rely on it as a replacement for the discernment that comes from prayer and seeking God's will. During June's Southern Baptist Convention meeting in New Orleans, messengers added resolutions regarding AI, urging pastors to use these tools in honest, transparent, and Christ-like ways. For Gulbranson, this vigilance isn't surprising. It's new, uncharted territory. AI among Christians might seem a little taboo. It's only a matter of time before churches understand more clearly how these technologies work and how to benefit from AI tools, explained Sa. Once they know, they will make rules around it. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News, so be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.